Most things in life, I've had to figure out for myself. How to make money, how to write a resume, how to talk to boys. But when it came to signing up for health insurance, I had a hard time figuring it out on my own. Turns out, I didn't have to. Covered California was made by Californians for Californians. They have experts to walk you through the process and financial help for people who need it. Enrollment ends January 31st. Go to coveredca.com. Covered California, this way to health insurance.
What's up, guys? Welcome to Last Call from the Scruffy Stuff. I'm Calvin Mattis, co-host and a photographer here at Knox News. If you haven't listened to the full podcast episode, hit pause, check that out on whatever platform you're listening on. And if you're not a subscriber to the podcast, we would love your support. So hit that big subscribe button. You'll get a notification whenever a new episode drops. Otherwise, let's get into our interview with Brandon J. Gibson. He's a singer from Knoxville, but most famous for his opera singing. And we got a little glimpse at a project that he's working on right now. So everything's really exciting that you're about to hear. But before we get into that, I want to remind everybody that the Scruffy Stuff is brought to you by KnoxNews.com, where you can find all the stories, photos, videos we talk about on the show and more. Knox News relies on support from readers and listeners to provide you compelling stories from Knoxville and across East Tennessee. Subscribers get an all-access pass to all our premium exclusive content, and to become a subscriber, it's easy. Go to knoxnews.com/subscribe to see all our latest offers and sign up today.
I think the first time that I had ever seen you on a stage, I remember seeing you over emceeing an event. I think it was Oktoberfest over in Old City a few years back underneath the overpass. How did you get into doing these MC events? I mean, you know, hosting on stage that way.
Well, you know, kind of by accident, honestly. Growing up, I was always the guy who didn't mind, you know, reading in front of the class or something like that, you know. Teacher needed somebody to read something. Okay, boom, I would always do that. And kind of my first emceeing gig came from Rusty Odom back when he was doing Blank Fest over in Market Square. And I don't even know how I met Rusty, just one of those figures of downtown. But I had just kind of met Rusty at something one day. And he knew that I was a performer and was putting on the festival, and I was at the festival. You know, I think one of the venues was the pub where you guys are, and you know, just around various venues around town. And he said, "Hey, man, will you help me, you know, MC this event? Will you help me announce some of the bands or something?" And I was like, "Okay, sure." Because like I said, public speaking has never been an issue for me. So I said, "All right, sure. What do you need me to do? Announce the band, thank the sponsor or something?" He said, "Yeah, basically, that's it." And so I did it just kind of on a whim because I was there anyway, and realized, oh, I'm kind of good at this. And from kind of that initial experience, I think it was when my Cadillacs were performing in Market Square. And they were like, "Hey, will you announce the Cadillac?" I was like, "Oh, yeah, sure. They're buddies of mine." You know, again, what? Thank the sponsors. We can make some t-shirts, witty banter. I'm a friendly guy. We can do all that stuff. Cool. And from there, I just kind of opened up some other downtown, especially opportunities for that. And so it sounds like you're talking about, I think, the Old City Oktoberfest.
Right, yeah.
One that I did, and did that 2 years in a row. Excited to, hopefully this year, that's able to go back on. And then I did a couple other things for Rusty. Second Bell was a fun time. I did that for him both years. And a couple other things back before they opened up.
We had Rusty on the show before, back when he was doing the the Monster Mash thing for Halloween. He was talking a little bit about that, but I wanted to ask you. I mean, you know, you said, you know, you never had problems speaking in front of class and you know, being on stage and performing. You know, I know some people are good public speakers, but they don't have the voice. You obviously have the voice. You got a speaking voice, and I know you got a singing voice. When did you realize that you had that, you know, that sound in your voice that resonated with people?
Honestly, kind of my entire life. It's just always really? I've always sung. I was, you know, one of those kids. I was in choir when I was, you know, probably church choir, you know, when I was a kid, you know, a little kid. And then I got into choir at school kind of really early as well. It's kind of a funny story. I remember I moved around a lot because my dad was in the Navy. So I moved around a lot. I remember for the beginning, you know, I was elementary school kid. I was terrified to sing in front of girls. Like, would sing, but yeah, a little girl was like, not about this, because it wasn't, you know, the coolest thing I did. And so I remember they had auditions for choir at the school I was in Virginia. And I was like, oh, okay, I can sing. And I walked into the choir and auditions, and the room was full of, you know, third, fourth grade little girls. And I said, nope, turned around and walked out. And I really
not doing it.
Yeah, not doing it. I really could have been the end of it all. And so, like, a couple of weeks later, I remember, you know how in elementary school you have, like, art class and music class and that sort of thing. So I remember the music class teacher had broken her foot. And so instead of hopping around the classroom on a crutch, she was in, like, a wheelchair. And so she was in her wheelchair, and I think we were singing, like, Feliz Navidad or something. And, you know, she stopped her wheelchair in front of me and said, hey, do you want to be in choir? And I said, do I have to audition? And she said, no. I said, all right, sure. And boom. So that was it.
That's awesome. You know, and now you do, you know, opera singing, and you know, that's not singing in your shower type of singing. I mean, that's like, you know, that's a, you got to have the voice. And how did that become, you know, part of your life? I mean, how does one get into that?
You know, honestly, you just kind of, I can only speak for myself. I looked at what I was good at, and you know, growing up, I was like, okay, who sings like I sing, just kind of naturally? Yeah, who's out there? And you know, I was like, oh, I can't sing like Boyz II Men, can't sing like Usher. I don't have that going on. But I knew I was really good in choir. You know, I was a guy, kind of the best guy here, but I don't really know, or I don't really encounter anyone or see anyone in popular music that sounds like me. And I remember going to the Rossini Festival. Actually, they took us, one of my classes, they took us junior year of high school. And I went and we saw, you know, whatever shows they were putting on. I couldn't remember. I remember looking at those guys and being like, oh, these guys sing like me. Okay, I could do this. And that was kind of it. So I said, okay, cool. I think I originally planned to major in communications or something. I thought, oh, I'll be a broadcaster. I'll do radio. I remember my mom always talked about how she had worked in radio in college or something, and that always sounded cool to me. And so I thought, oh, I'll major in communications or something, and you know, be a radio guy or whatever. But then I saw those guys and was like, oh, they sound like me. I can do this. And boom, that was it.
And you did it. I know you said you moved around a lot. Did you grow up at all in Knoxville, or did you move here later on in life, or how did that happen? You said Rossini Fest. So I didn't know if you met, if that was here.
Yeah, my family moved here when I was a sophomore in high school. And so that would have been, I guess it seems like half my life now, 2001. We moved here and I went to Austin East High School, Performing Arts and Sciences, back over in East Knoxville, and lived really close to downtown, honestly, just past downtown in Alex Haley Park right there. And so my entire experience of Knoxville has kind of been as a downtown guy, because I remember the ghost town days, and yeah, you know, it feels like it's kind of grown up along with me through the years.
Right. I feel like do you hang out here a lot? I feel like I've seen you at Press Pub before a few times.
Press Pub became one of my favorite spots because I was doing Shakespeare in the Square, and
okay,
traditionally they rehearse at First Presbyterian a couple blocks away. But I'd get off of work at, you know, 5 or something, and rehearsal would start at 7. And so I wasn't going to go home for 2 hours and then come back out. And so I would get off of work, and that was back in the way back days when Preservation Pub would have, like, free pizza, like, in the window, like, when you hung out there. They just keep it by the door. And so I was like, well, I can sit here, look at my lines, eat some pizza, and then walk to rehearsal. And that was kind of what I did before then. And it kind of evolved from there to, well, I've been here every day because, you know, you rehearse for 3 months over the summer. So I was like, well, I've been here every day for X amount of, you know, months. I started hanging out there, and here we are, years later.
Yeah.
But it's just one of those places that just kind of feels like a, just a gathering spot of Knoxville, you know, holidays after everyone's hung out with their families, for however long they can stand, then all right, let's go to the pub and see who's in town, you know, that sort of thing. So
you mentioned earlier, like, some of the music that you are performing. I'm wondering, what kind of music inspires you? Is it hip hop? Is it rock music? Is it jazz? Or where do you grow? Or where do you draw your inspiration from?
Or do you listen to this stuff as well? I mean, do you listen to opera music as well, or do you more of a popular music kind of guy? Or where does your inspiration fit?
All over the place musically, really. I gotta appreciate anything that can be performed live, and so that's another reason why I enjoyed the pub and in the downtown scene in general, is because, you know, there are so many live music venues and you can see so many different types of things, but I listen to it all. I'm probably I love jazz. I love hip hop. I love rock and roll, Americana. I love what inspires me. I'd probably say I enjoy, you know, beyond that, probably musical theater stuff as well. I mean, I don't listen to opera as much because that's kind of work. You know, unless I'm learning it, I don't listen to it casually. But really, I'm all over the place. And I kind of think my performance career reflects that too, because I'm kind of known more as an opera guy, but I've done, sung with jazz musicians too. And I've done a lot of musical theater stuff. I've sung on a couple of hip hop records too, you know, just kind of stuff. I just love music in general, and right. I love the collaboration aspect of it and the community of musicians as well. There's a strong musicians community in Knoxville, and it takes me back to my like music major days at UT. Honestly, we were just all kind of in there together, and so you didn't know like what you would end up doing. You just kind of knew, okay, this guy's in my class with me. He's a jazz bassist, or this other guy's a cellist, or this other guy's whatever. And it's kind of reflected in the music scene. So you kind of see your friend who's a guitar player playing for Fish cover band or something, and you're like, okay, that's cool too. And then you go to like the bistro or something, and you see that same guy, and he's playing jazz guitar. It's just kind of whatever, you know.
I wanted to ask too, I mean, I feel like I'm bouncing all over the place, but going back to, you know, whenever you started getting into, when you started realizing, I guess you said you were in high school, when you started realizing, people don't sing like me, I got this different style of voice. What was that like? I mean, as far as, you know, the people that you were around that were into music, if you had people that were listening to Boys to Men and you're over here singing like that, I mean, was that, what were people's reactions when they heard your voice? And then a double part question, when you get to UT, how did that change? Because I've heard from a lot of people, man, people, you know, they grow up their whole lives thinking they're the only ones that sing like this, and they get to a place where they meet all these other people and you know, they're like, oh, these people are just like me. What was it like when you were, you know, in high school, and then how did that change when you got to college as far as just, you know, how your voice was interpreted and received by people?
It was really interesting. So in high school, I can remember it was when people didn't really know how to take me. And at first it was like, what is he doing? You know, why didn't he sing like, you know, anything else? You know, I'm in high school, 2000 to 2004. So what was hot right then? Like, you know, Usher or, you know, Genuine or something like that. People were like, why didn't he, like, what's up with that? But as I was there, it kind of went from like confusion and kind of whatever to respect. And a lot of people kind of went from, we don't know what you're doing, man, to, you know what, I respect it though. You're still doing it. You know, and I remember by the time I was a senior and by the time I graduated, it was kind of like, you know what, we don't know what's going on there, but it's cool. And you're doing it, and we respect you for doing it. And so that was kind of high school. And then I remember when I got to college, it became, okay, yes, now everybody's kind of doing that because that's, you know, my major or whatever. But then it also expanded to, you don't just have to only sing opera. You know, you don't have to put the blinders on and only do this, even though this is what you're receiving your training in. What that training is really doing is giving you the tools to be just a vocalist in general. Know how to, you know, the music background, the theory background, the technique background, to know the nuts and bolts. What you do with that is then on you. And so that was actually when I really opened up and said, okay, I can also use this for other things. Like I remember actually changed my major. I was the only music major for my first half of college. And then I started doing theater because they needed, it's funny, the story goes, they were doing a production of Big River at UT, and they sent out an email on kind of this this listserv that every Black person at UT at the time got the same scholarship. And so the listserv for that scholarship was basically all the Black kids at UT. And they basically said, hey, are you Black and can you sing? Because we need some help with this production that we're doing. And the lady who was directing it had actually directed something that I did with Knox Opera like the year before. And I was like, oh, I know her, and check, and I'm Black, check, and I can sing, check. So sure, I responded to the email and they were like, oh man, please come on. Yes, you're nerving me, blah, blah, blah. And so I did a musical and kind of had the eye-opening experience. Oh, they can sing too. You know, this is not, it's not just that opera isn't the only kind of music for voices like mine. You can also do musical theater. And so I did that and learned how to act and went through all that training and stuff as well. And, but then, like I said, I kind of expanded even further beyond that. I realized if you want to have any sort of career, you kind of have to get used to collaboration and experimentation. And, you know, you can't just put your blinders on and say, I only do this. I only do A or I only do B. And so I said, all right, what else can I do? And so, like I said, I always listened to jazz growing up and had a bunch of jazz musician friends. And finally I said, you know what? Sure, I'll sit in with some jazz guys. And, oh, I know this song. And so did that. And I remember I had a friend with a funk band and he was like, hey man, you want to jump on for a song? And I said, you know what? Sure. I like funk music, and gave that a go, you know, boom. And had a friend who was a rapper and he was like, hey man, will you sing the hook on this thing for me? I was like, eh, you know what? Why not? Sure. Boom. And, you know, that was just kind of how I've approached my career. Really, it's just that it's music is music, art is art. And you kind of can get in where you fit in. Honestly, you just have to be right, willing to, you know, fit or, you know, apply your skills to the opening that's there.
And then as far as, you know, opera in Knoxville, what, I mean, when you get out of school, and I don't know how much time it was between when you graduated and whenever you get involved in the scene here, but I mean, what was the opera scene like? Was there an opera scene? How did you get your, your footing in opera in Knoxville? I feel like a lot of people would think you have to move away, but you've really been able to do it here. You know, how did that all get started?
Well, honestly, I kind of lucked into it. I was fortunate, was blessed. Just my choir teacher in high school, right before I graduated from high school, saw an ad in the paper for the Knoxville Opera Chorus that basically said, hey, we need some men in the opera chorus. And my choir teacher said, hey, you're going to UT to major in music. You should go and check it out, see what's about. And I was like, oh man. At that point, I'd never been in an opera. I didn't know. So yeah, I'd just been in choir in high school. But I was like, okay, sure. And so I went and sung for one of the nicest humans in the world, Don Townsend, the longtime choir master for the Knoxville Opera. So 17 years old, you know, no beard, baby face Brandon, just goes and sings for him, calling him Mr. Townsend, because I'm, you know, good Southern upbringing. And I sing for him and he says, you know what? Okay, sure. And so I was able to get into the Knox Opera Chorus before I even got to college technically. So freshman year on, I have been able right, to sing with them, and they do three shows a year, and really just kind of on a contract basis, you know, they call you up, they say, hey, we need some bass in this one. Are you free? Blah, blah, blah. And, you know, so had that experience and got that opportunity early on. And then from there, the opera director at UT left for another job and they brought in another one. And his wife and a former UT student actually started another opera company in Knoxville called Marble City Opera, just a small chamber opera company that would do the sorts of things that, you know, were too small or just kind of too modern or too avant-garde for the big Knoxville opera to do. And they started that to do, you know, new stuff. And so the timeline on it worked out just to where it was kind of automatically after, you know, in my mid-20s. And so I started singing with them from the very beginning. I was like, oh, this is cool. How convenient. A new opera company in town. And so I started singing with them from the beginning. And then probably around 3 or 4 years in, technically, the co-founder, Catherine Frady, asked me, said, hey, you've been singing with us from the beginning. And we need someone, like, they are not from here. So we kind of need someone who has Knoxville connections and knows what's up in here and has the background. Would you be interested in being my managing director for the company? And I said, sure. You know, yeah, that's perfect. And so I've been doing that for the last, it'll be 4 years next month. And so kind of arts administration was not something that I'd ever thought of, but it's been a perfect fit and something that I love and enjoy. And like I said, it'll be 4 years next month that I've been doing that. And it has afforded me, you know, performance opportunities. I perform with them as well, but then I do the management stuff on the side and, you know, just kind of, we're a small operation, but it's really rewarding to be able to, you know, give other, you know, other opera singers in the area the same opportunities, you know, performance opportunities and, you know, internship opportunities, that sort of thing. Because like you said, the traditional kind of prevailing sentiment is that if you want to do anything professional level at this at all, you got to move somewhere. And that's no longer necessarily the case. And it's really rewarding to be a part of that.
Yeah. What? So your classification of your voice, what is that? Is yours as deep as it goes?
So I'd be considered a bass baritone. I'm medium deep. I can get down there, but I can get up too.
You know, obviously, you know, you mentioned that you love any type of music that can be performed live, and obviously that's not happening right now with COVID-19. So how are you dealing with that right now? We've been asking everybody sort of the same question, but for a live performer, you know, I know it's got to be especially challenging. So what's life like right now, and how are you adapting?
It is tough, just being completely honest, because it kind of hits you in two levels. You know, one, livelihood, you know, you can't perform and make money, one, but then B, kind of on a personal level, it's your hobby, it's what you like to do for fun too. So it's, you know, work and fun just kind of cut out right now, and it's tough, but I'm hopeful and confident that it will, you know, return if we can get this thing under control. Something that the opera company has been doing, we've gone to a lot of virtual content. And so all of our shows now, we do them, you know, also streamed live online so that people can, you know, watch from home. And a lot of things are having to do that. I mean, there was a period there where you couldn't get online and someone wasn't doing like a living room concert or something like that, or a yard concert, just because, like I said, I mean, it's tough. It's what you do. And so, and another thing that's uniquely challenging about it as a performer is that you're kind of motivated to create art in times of trouble. And so when, you know, terrible things are going on, or kind of when the muse speaks to you and you want to, you know, do something, like, oh, you want to play a song about it or sing a song about it, or, you know, do whatever in reaction to it. But that's exactly kind of what you can't do right now in front of people. And so it is challenging just emotionally and, you know, financially and all that stuff. But, you know, it's hitting everybody hard right now. And so you just kind of have to hunker down, and brighter days are ahead. Sun is coming up as I say that. It's a, you know, a metaphor, but you know, brighter days are ahead.
Right. But it sounds like you have been able to express yourself at least through writing, right? I mean, you'd mentioned briefly to me about this opera that you're working on, and I was wondering if you want to maybe just talk a little bit about that and the plans for that.
Definitely. So what it is, it's called I Can't Breathe. And the artistic director of Marble City Opera was kind of sitting around one day in the early or in the late spring last year when all the things were going on with, you know, Ahmaud Arbery and George Floyd and, yeah, Breonna Taylor, when all of those things were kind of in the news cycle, and it was at the beginning of the pandemic, we all kind of felt helpless. And she said, you know what, there should be an opera about this time in American history, you know, this, all of this social justice uprising that's going on. And she's always an idea person. And so she said, you know, just, hey, there should be an opera about this. And then she came to me and said, hey, do you agree with me? And I said, yeah. And then she said the magic words, do you want to write it? And I said, I've never attempted to, you know, do anything like that before, never thought of doing it before. But I said, you know what, why not? Yes, I will. Just a little bit, as a little background on that, I kind of would consider myself an essayist. You know, whenever anything happens or stuff like that, my friends joke with me all the time. They say, oh man, on Facebook, you're writing novels as your Facebook status, because it's an essay about, you know, my commentary on whatever's going on and my feelings. And that's kind of how I work out my emotions. And so I had written just several things just during that whole time, kind of about the entire situation and, you know, my frustration, my anger, just dealing with all of those emotions. And we mentioned Rusty earlier as well. I also write for Blank newspaper still currently, but so I'm not a stranger to writing. And so I said, you know what? Yes, we can do this. I will write this. And honestly, that was that. So I sat down and I thought, what do I want this to be? And we talked about, you know, a format. How could we format it? How could we do that sort of thing? And so we came up with the format. And over the course of last summer, I completed, you know, the story, the characters, the theme, all that stuff for the show. And last fall, we found a composer. One of our board members actually recommended this gentleman, and we listened to some of his other compositions and loved his work. His name is Leslie Burrs, and we loved his work, and we contacted him. I sent him the libretto. He read it, loved it, and kind of immediately said yes and started writing music for it. So we are on board, on track rather, to have the world premiere of the opera in February next year, February 2022. He'll probably be finished with the score this summer, and we'll cast, you know, singers in the fall and premiere it next February. But I'm really excited about it. And like I said, it is in reaction to all the tragic events that, you know, happened with police brutality and, you know, social injustice last year. So really excited about it.
I just want to give a shout out to our colleague, Angela Dennis. I know you had worked on the Black and Appalachia podcast with her. I just wonder if you could talk a little bit about what that experience was like doing, you know, spoken voice as well.
It was amazing. I kind of fell into that. A friend of mine, William Isom, who is a producer with Black and Appalachia, contacted me and said, hey, we need somebody to come in and just kind of do some voiceover things on something. And I've heard, I don't think he'd met me at the time, but he kind of said, I've heard that, you know, your voice is the one that we should have on this. And so I said, oh, I'd love to. I'd always wanted to get into voiceovers and that sort of thing. And so I went, they film and edit everything over at East Tennessee PBS. And so went over there, and the first thing that I worked on, I believe, was the documentary that they did for Emancipation Day, the 8th of August. And that's the day that actually, there's Juneteenth, where word of the Emancipation Proclamation reached a lot of places in the South, but Tennessee didn't realize it or get word until August the 8th, when Andrew Jackson freed his slaves. And so that's the day that is celebrated here. And so it kind of went from a one-time thing to, you know, they liked me and I was good at it, and so they kept calling me back. And it went from that one documentary to, I think I've done probably five, I believe, four of them now. The most recent one was one that I did, again, early last spring for Buford Delaney. And that was especially special for me because we were also doing an opera about his life called Shadowlight, where I was playing Buford Delaney. And so I had the great, you know, honor, really, it was to portray the man in the opera and also to narrate the documentary about his life. And it's been really just a wonderful and rewarding experience. I'm grateful for it. And just for the opportunity, but also I've learned so much. Like, I learned a lot about him doing the documentary. Another one I did was about the Red Summer race riots in Knoxville 100 years ago, and had no idea that even happened, you know, right downtown of all places too. So,
and then one more question before we get off here, because it sounds like they're starting to do some construction next door at Bernadette. So we might be, I hear some drills going over there. I did want to ask, you know, opera is something that I feel like a lot of people at this day and age maybe aren't as familiar with. And I'm just wondering if there's one thing that you would want people to know about opera that probably the average person doesn't know. Is there something that you would say that sort of illustrates your passion for that, that you think could maybe, you know, inspire others to maybe give it a shot?
Definitely. A lot of people hear opera and think that it's just people running around singing in, you know, different languages and, you know, doing all this outlandish stuff. It seems kind of cartoonish and like it's not real, but it is just as real as anything else. They may be singing in Italian, but they're singing about the same things that everybody sings about everywhere else. Sex, love, loss of love, you know, death, you know, all that stuff. It's the same. It's the same exact themes that you find in any other music. It just may be in a different language, but that also that it doesn't have to be in another language. Like, there's a lot of American operas. There's a lot of English operas. There's operas still being written. It's not a, it is not a dead art form that's, you know, only 100 years or something old. No, it's relevant. There's operas, like I said, we've got one that we're doing about stuff that's happening right now. There are lots of people writing operas right now in English that are, you know, beautiful, deserve to be heard, and give it a try. Trust me, it's beautiful and just as relevant as any other music that you listen to. Like, if you listen to Taylor Swift and she's singing a love song, there's probably an Italian song somewhere where they're singing about the exact same thing. And really, it's accessible and smart and beautiful and important. And I love it.
Awesome. Well, if people want to keep up with you and the work that you're doing with Marble City, what's the best way for them to do that? Follow you on social media?
Yes, they can follow Marble City Opera on social media, just really Marble City Opera. So Facebook, Marble City Opera, search that. Instagram, Marble City Opera. YouTube, Twitter, all Marble City Opera. For me personally, I am Brandon J. Gibson on Facebook. And like we've kind of touched on, I do a lot of things, from, you know, acting, singing, writing, emceeing, all that stuff. But to follow my exploits personally, look me up there, Brandon J. Gibson on Facebook. And I've got a website as well where I post, you know, updates on what's going on. And as the opera gets closer, you'll see a lot of things about that there as well. And that's just my full name, Brandon Javon, J-O-V-A-N, Gibson.com.
Awesome, Brandon. Well, I appreciate you joining us here on the show. It's nice finally meeting you. Like I've said, I've seen you around town all the time. I feel like I know you. And, you know, I'm excited for whenever, you know, live music and performances and everything gets back. And when that happens, I'll definitely come check you out. So thanks again for joining us.
Can't wait. Thank you.
That's it for this week, everyone. Please remember to hit subscribe and you'll be the first to know when our new episodes launch. Otherwise, if you want to keep up with us, you can follow Ryan, it's at Knox Scruff, or you can follow the new Sentinel Instagram, it's at Knoxville Photo.
Hey, we get it. You don't want to be hearing a Progressive commercial right now, so let us tell you something you do want to hear. You are intelligent. You make all the right decisions. You were smart before smart was cool, and you made it cool again. You have a wealth of knowledge, and you are so very clever. I bet you already knew I was going to say that, you genius. There, don't you feel better? You'll also feel better when you hear you could save big when you switch to Progressive. But I'm pretty sure you already knew that, too. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates.
Progressive presents an interview with your upstairs neighbor.
Hey, it's Rick from upstairs. Yeah, I take it seriously. When I play R&B at 1 in the morning, that's me saying, hey, I'm here for you. And I enjoy repetitive bass lines.
I only use expired batteries in my smoke detectors.
Nice, right? Yeah, upstairs neighbors help people forget their troubles. Give them something else to focus on. Ooh, want to see how high I can jump?
Progressive can't save you from your upstairs neighbor.
No, wait, let me try again.
But we can save you money when you bundle renters and auto insurance with us. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates, and other insurers. Bundle discount not available in all states or situations.